This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The longest ongoing scientific experiment in the United States has been taking place right here in Michigan. In 1879, a botanist named William Beale wondered how long seeds could remain viable underground. So he buried 20 unsealed bottles of seeds to be dug up after some amount of years had elapsed. He knew full well that the answer to his experiment might not come in his lifetime. The botanist leading Beale's seed experiment today is Professor Frank Teluski, professor of plant biology at Michigan State University, and he's with us now. Frank, welcome to Stateside.
Well, thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about William Beale.
Well, Professor Beale was born in Michigan. His parents moved to Michigan from upstate New York, and he was born down in the Adrian area, out in the farm country. His parents, of course, were farmers. And he had a great passion for plants coming up from that background. And so he went on to school and on to college. He eventually went on to Harvard University, where he studied under Professor Asa Gray, who's a very well-known botanist, and earned his degree and was exposed to botanical gardens and other interesting plant issues that were being addressed at Harvard at the time. And he eventually and came to Michigan State in 1870, and he founded the Beale Botanical Gardens here on campus in 1873, of which I'm the director. And he also established this experiment, as you described, in 1879. He did a lot of work with farmers in the Farmer Institute. Michigan State University is the oldest land-grant institution in the country, established land-grant institution. And he would do a lot of work going out and talking to farmers, the Farmers Institute, and giving them advice and listening to their questions and trying to help them answer their questions to increase productivity on the land they were farming.
Tell us a little more about what he was trying to find out. Why was the viability of seeds over time something of interest to him? I guess also to farmers that he would have been friends with.
Well, it was a very interesting question because at this point in time with agriculture and other aspects of growing plants, he was becoming more increasingly aware of the what we refer to today as the seed bank. And that is the seeds that are stored in the soil that will remain dormant for an unknown period of time. And when you disturb that soil and you bring that soil up through cultivation, or if there's a disturbance in the habitat, a fire or a flood, these could help expose the buried seeds, and those seeds would begin to germinate and repopulate the area. And so I could see farmers asking Professor Beale back then, we're out here cultivating these fields. We have to do a lot of our work by hand. We're weeding. We have a hoe. We're going through and hoeing our rows. A long row to hoe, as the saying goes, means you got a lot of work ahead of you.
Right.
And, when are these seeds going to stop appearing? Because we keep getting them before they produce new seeds. And so I can see that being part of the reason why Professor Beale thought this would be an interesting question to address.
So, like I said, he had this idea to bury bottles of seeds. Can you explain a little bit more about how he set this up? What did he have in mind for how often he'd go back and check on them?
Sure. So you did pretty good describing that at the top of the story. But he had 20 bottles, and he had 21 species of seeds that he was interested in, of plants he selected. A lot of them were annual or biannual weeds. Some of them were not so weedy. And he mixed up 50 seeds of each species into these bottles and buried them here on campus. And basically every 5 years, he would extract a bottle and shake out its contents and put it in a greenhouse and see what would germinate. He continued that work on until his retirement in 1910. And he passed the experiment on to Professor Darlington. And Professor Darlington, who came to replace Professor Beale here at MSU, continued the experiment on till 1920. In 1920, Professor Darlington made the decision to extend the period to every 10 years because pretty much he was seeing the same results that had happened over the course of the past several five-year periods. And that continued on until 1980. In 1980, Professor Bandersky and Kivalon had taken over this study, and that was the 100th anniversary, the 100th year bottle. And so it was put to a vote by the Department of Plant Biology, then known as the Department of Botany and Plant Pathology, and whether or not they should extend the period to every 20 years. So I arrived here at Michigan State in 1993, and in 1999, Professor Jan Zeevaart, who had received the information and the map, location map from Professor Bandersky, had asked me as the director of the Botanical Garden, named for Professor Beale, and being a plant physiologist, if I would be interested in taking it on for the next generation. And so I was very honored that Jan asked me that. And so here I am today. So this is my second bottle.
So tell me about the digging. What do you remember about the first time you went out to dig them up?
Oh, gosh, I remember we agreed to meet early in the morning, as has been done for the history of the experiment. And by the time I had gotten out to the location where the bottles are, Jan had already excavated the hole and had neatly exposed the bottle tops there. And lo and behold, said, well, you have the honor, go down and, extract the bottle. And so I did. And then we took it back to the laboratory. And for the past several experiments on this, the bottles have been emptied out and the seeds placed inside of a growth chamber to give us a little bit of better control than you get in a greenhouse in terms of environmental conditions for germination. So we met down in the basement of the plant biology department where the growth chambers are, and we extracted the seeds and the sandy soil mix that the seeds are mixed into and spread it out and waited to see what would happen.
Is it hard to locate the place where you left the jars? I mean, I don't know if GPS is of any help to you these days, but how do you find them again?
Well, for over 100 years, nobody relied on GPS, so I think we could be able to find it without GPS today. No, we didn't use a GPS. There is a map. The map was redrawn. The map that I have was redrawn in 1989. So it's a very nicely drafted map by a professional draftsperson, one of our landscape architects I talked to about it. She recalls that she may have actually been the person that drafted that back then. So it's got, details in terms of, where it is on campus and landmarks and how to find the bottles.
I think you said a moment ago that the seeds are traditionally dug up very early in the morning. Why is that?
Yeah. Well, for two reasons. First of all, it's been hypothesized that light is a trigger for germination, and some seeds do require light. So lettuce seeds, for example, when you sow them in your garden or in your greenhouse for planting in your vegetable garden, require light to germinate. So we want to make sure that we don't get any sunlight or ambient light shining on the bottles and accidentally, stimulate germination of seeds that would still be underground. So it's a precaution. The other aspect of it is that we just don't also want to have a lot of distraction and a lot of attention drawn to the dig. And so we dig it up, and when there's nobody on campus and nobody wandering around, and we just kind of try to keep it as buried as possible.
Frank, why is it that the seeds don't germinate when they're buried for so many years? Is it only the matter of the light?
Well, no, and this is actually, I think, becoming a very interesting question. By diversifying my team for the seed study, it used to just be passed along from one researcher to another. This year, I actually included four other researchers onto the team. So with these four additional faculty members who joined us, it's really an exciting time to discuss questions and pose hypotheses that we can test and look at this from a 21st century perspective. You've got this experiment started in the last quarter of the 19th century, and here we are in the first quarter of the 20th century, and techniques and technologies have changed dramatically. DNA sequencing is readily available. DNA was only really discovered as the carrier of the genetic code back in the 1950s, so Professor Beale had no idea. And so how can we use some of these new technologies that we have access to answer some of the questions that are being raised? Exactly like you were saying before, why is it that these seeds remain viable in the soil for so long, and don't germinate? And what are the triggers? And so we're looking at some of those questions. Some of those questions have been addressed by others in other studies. But again, it seems to be a cycling of temperature and of moisture availability. The soil that we excavated is moist, but it's not wet. We don't know what kind of condition the seeds are in terms of imbibition of water, the absorption of water by the seed. But they're also buried down in the ground, not very deep, so they're not unreasonably deep. They're not below the frost line, so they definitely go through a seasonal cycle, but they don't go through a diurnal cycle like they would up at the surface. And with sunshine shining on the soil, it can actually raise the soil temperature up quite significantly over ambient air temperature, and then at night really cool down. So some of these cyclings appear to be involved in the germination process that does not happen when they're buried deeper in the soil and kind of insulated, buffered from those environmental extremes.
Huh. Is it too soon to say what you found out about this question of whether native or invasive seeds, have an edge in germination?
No, because we haven't really looked at that, and the experimental design that Professor Beal established does not really give us the opportunity to answer that question. But as a team, we've been discussing the possibility of setting up a Beal 2.0 seed experiment where we would actually design the experiment specifically to address some of these questions.
Yeah. These things that you're finding out about viability must mean something for ecological conservationists. Would you say that the experiment so far has influenced that area of ecology?
I believe so. A number of people who are working in the area of seed germination do cite the papers that have been published by the various scientists, myself and Jan included, our paper in 2002. And I think it's very important from that aspect, because this is an actual controlled, as best as we can control it, experiment in terms of its design. There are a lot of reports of seeds germinating that were buried in the permafrost up in the Arctic region, about seeds that were maybe buried or found in excavations, archaeological excavations in caves, or even in latrines. It's amazing, some excavations in latrines
wow.
have actually found seeds germinating after being buried for over 100 years. So the fact that seeds have long viability is pretty well established. That's not the question. But this one actually mimics or replicates the natural conditions you would find within the seed bank as it occurs in nature. And so specifically, these bottles are filled with a sandy mix, which the sandy soil is what surrounds the bottles. And they're left open at the base so that there's gas exchange, oxygen and carbon dioxide can diffuse in and out of the bottles, as well as moisture, so that there's an equilibrium between moisture content inside the bottles and outside the bottles. But they were buried upside down so that the bottles wouldn't actually fill up with water and then retain that water and then flood the seeds and kill the seeds that way.
Smart.
So this was specifically designed to address that question of viability within the seed bank, within the soil.
Is there anything that we can say definitively at this point about why one seed is still viable and maybe another one becomes inert?
A lot of that has to do with the nature of the seeds and the species. But if you look at seeds, some seeds we refer to as being recalcitrant, and they're seeds that just do not have a long viability. And then there's a whole range of viability issues between different species. And it seems to have something to do with seed size and seed volume. These very small seeds seem to really retain viability for a longer period of time. It may have to do with the storage products, the genetics of the metabolism. These seeds are very slow at metabolizing. You think about a seed, the seed contains everything that embryo plant inside there needs to survive during dormancy, and then also enough to sit there and give it the energy to germinate and put up those first cotyledons above ground in order for it to fix sunlight and photosynthesize and supply that young plant with food. So when you have a really tiny seed, you don't have a lot of energy inside of it. So the metabolism slows down incredibly in those seeds, or it's slow to begin with, and until it's actually exposed to favorable growing conditions. But that's not inherent in every species. So each species has its own timer clock, if you will, internally in terms of how long it'll remain viable. And I'm not that familiar with current research on that area to really appropriately answer the question of what specifics do we know at this time. Hence my reason for diversifying the team to
right.
actually answer these questions.
Frank, you mentioned that there's at least some talk of Beal 2.0. How long do you think you can keep this going?
Well, the currently designed experiment by Professor Beal, there's four more bottles in the ground, and we open up every 20 years, so it's going to go to 2100. So that's when we'll have the last bottle, unless somebody in the future decides to kind of extend it beyond that. The problem with extending it beyond 20 years is that we don't want it to go intergenerational. and actually maybe have somebody forget about the bottles. And so it's a human memory issue as well as a functional issue for the seeds. So that's a question we're going to, obviously it's going to go beyond me because we've excavated the bottle just a couple of weeks ago. But the experiment that we're currently working on and looking at designing, we haven't set a time frame for how far in it would go into the future, but that's going to be part of our design. And it's also going to be determined on the availability of seeds and how many seeds we put in a bottle.
I guess we take for granted that everyone involved in the scientific method, to some extent, stands on the shoulders of the people who came before them and uses the information that somebody else, maybe even before our birth, came up with. But it's not very common for scientists to take part in something like this with such a long arc. Do you think that there are things that are possible on this scale that don't happen with most of the experiments that you're involved with?
Well, I think when you look at long-lived organisms, that certainly could be the case. And when you look at evolutionary questions, that's certainly the case. We have a colleague here at MSU, Rich Lenski, and Rich has talked about his experiment. He's got about 33 years, I think, on it now, looking at bacterial populations over time and evolution within bacterial populations. I forgot how many thousands of generations he's had in that period of time. But, that's a really neat way to study evolution and look at it. Of course, bacteria populations go very, very quickly. So you can have multiple populations within a relatively short period of time, unlike plants. Trees, when you think about trees, are very long-lived organisms. And so tree breeders, that's a very interesting question, because when you're a tree breeder, how many generations can you actually produce and test within your lifespan? So there are questions out there, I think, that merit, looking at in a long perspective. And I think that was one of the things that was kind of unique, not exclusively unique to Professor Beal, but he was one of those people who we would call a visionary. He actually planted trees with the intent of having his tree studies go well beyond his lifetime. There's a very interesting study up at Grayling, Michigan, and one here on campus that I've had graduate students and myself work on over 100 years after Beal established it, to document survivorship and growth and development of the trees over a course of 100 years. And just like his tree work, the Beal seed study is one that he designed to carry on long after his mortal reign on the earth and for it to pass along. And it's really fascinating. It's just really an honorable thing to be involved with this. It's not a study that I've initiated, but yet it's a study that I have stewardship over, and that the team members that we've selected will have stewardship over in the future.
Frank Tolusky is professor of plant biology at Michigan State University. Frank, thank you so much for telling us about the Beal experiment. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome, and thank you for asking questions.